Hello and welcome to another episode of Irreverent Testimony, a political podcast by and for millennial, Gen Xer, left winger types. We have just Trav and Rach today. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And we got a thing or two to talk about. Our last podcast, I believe, was drunken post-debate. Or did we do one after that? I don't even remember now.
I don't think so. I think that was the last
one. That was the last one? Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're all sober and accounted for this time.
Yes.
And some one or two things happened. It is Tuesday, October 20th. And where do we start, Rach?
Okay, well, there's lots to talk about. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about the Paul Ryan bombshell, or do you want to talk about Joe Biden, or do you want to talk about...
Yeah, I don't know that there's much of a Paul Ryan bombshell. He's just kind of like, yeah, I might do it if you, you know, you meet these demands or what have you.
But right.
We'll get to that. Let's backtrack a little bit first, because we left off about talking about where we thought how the debate went and how we thought it ended up. And I think we pretty much hit the mark right, it looks like, now that sort of the Instapoll stuff died away, which I knew was a bunch of crap and didn't mean anything anyway. It looks like Hillary has widened her lead a little bit. She did really well. Most people think she won.
Yes.
Bernie helped himself, but probably didn't expand his base very much.
Yes.
O'Malley, unlike you had predicted, hasn't really put his name on the radar.
No, I was wrong on that one, unfortunately.
Yeah. And that's because you're not yet as cynical as I am. So I don't fault you for that, because O'Malley did make good points, and in a perfect world, he would have put his name on the map a little more, but his delivery was just kind of weird and soft. And
it really was a battle between Hillary and Bernie.
Yeah.
They remains.
They sucked up out all the air.
Yes.
We knew that Webb and Chafee were on borrowed time, and sure enough, today Jim Webb dropped out of the race and is threatening to maybe run as an independent or something, as if anybody cares.
Right. We were saying earlier, you know, he's one of those people that believes that moderate Republicans and Blue Dog Democrats are still a major voting block, just aren't.
Which apparently a new guy entering the race seems to think. We'll get to that in a hot minute. But yeah, it looks like Hillary helped herself a lot.
Yeah, she did great.
Bernie helped himself, but not as much as Hillary did, which is bad news for him because he's still in the trail position.
Although I did see on the news that in New Hampshire, he is leading.
Well, it depends on which poll you look, because a couple polls came out today that showed now her leading. But, you know, if that seems to be the only state where he's showing a lead consistently.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, okay, he might win New Hampshire, you know. And again, we're Bernie supporters. We'd love to see him do well, but we're not going to be clueless about it. And we're not going to certainly get into slinging crap at Hillary about
it. No, I love Hillary.
That some Bernie supporters
are
trying to do. So we're realistic. We're realistic Bernie supporters.
Yes.
And if something happens with Hillary and Bernie takes off in the polls, or he just does it on his own volition, great. We'd be really excited about it.
Yeah, we'll caucus for him too.
Yeah, we're going to caucus for him regardless, because we want him to have as much influence, even if he doesn't wind up getting the nomination, which still looks like a long shot at this point. We want as much of his influence in there as possible.
Yeah.
So just getting that, clarification out of the way, so you kind of know where we personally stand. There's that, Webb's gone. Chafee is still technically in the race for some reason,
or 0%,
or McAfee, as our friend would call him.
Poor Dana.
Yeah. Lincoln McAfee, still peddling the metric system and something. And certainly you would think the person most hurt by the debates, just by virtue of A, Hillary and Bernie's strong performance, and B, not being there himself, would be Joe Biden.
Correct.
But the tea leaves in the last 24 hours are again percolating and making people think maybe he's about to jump in. I will only be convinced of that once he officially announces that.
Agreed. He has done some weird things today. We'll just talk a little bit about what is Joe Biden doing.
Yeah, I guess we could segue into that now.
Yeah. He gave some interviews that...
They weren't interviews. I think they were speeches.
Yeah, it was like interview style, one of them that I saw. But yeah, like in an auditorium.
Right.
And he said some weird stuff, some very baffling stuff. He was retelling, I guess, the story about bin Laden and the decision that was made to go in for bin Laden.
Yeah, which he initially said he was against for some reason.
Right. And then he came back today with this bizarro version of it where in the room he said, kind of, I guess, I don't know. And then privately, he told Obama that he should go for it because he didn't want to undermine Obama in the room, which I thought was actually kind of infantilizing to Obama a little bit, as though the president would be undermined by Joe Biden. Like, I didn't want to make him look bad in front of his advisors. Like, you're Joe Biden and he's Obama. I think he's fine. The story didn't make a lot of sense.
No, and plus he contradicted Hillary's version of the bin Laden.
Yeah, and his own previous version of it. So,
that didn't make
very confusing.
Yeah, I didn't understand at all where Joe was going with that.
He was kind of like maybe throwing her under the bus a little bit.
I guess, sort of.
She didn't waver in her position that he should go for it, and if Obama had decided he didn't want to go in, then that would have been bad. But you know what, he doesn't pay people to be yes men. He wants your opinion, and if you can't provide it, like, if he didn't want to be contradicted, I guess he wouldn't ask for your opinion. If he asks for it, in my opinion, you should have an opinion and you should give it freely. That's speaking truth to power.
Yeah, there was nothing good about that Joe Biden.
No, it was
sound
baffling
today. It was bad on every level. It contradicted what he previously said. B, it seemed to try to throw Hillary under the bus for no good reason. And C, it didn't make any sense, even when you took it at face value. So you're not going to speak up, but then you're going to say something privately to for something.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense. I don't know where he was going with that.
And something that's that important, the decision needs to have, the conversation, the debate needs to happen in the room with the people that have the information. Yeah, you need to battle it out if you don't agree.
Yeah, you don't want to show a divided front, anything. I mean, we should learn that from the Cold War and all the shit Kennedy went through.
Yeah.
A lot of his military advisors trying to start World War III in Cuba.
And,
you know, they had to do a lot of maneuvering there, but what they never did was showed a non-unified front in front of the generals, and that's a whole other thing I can geek out about, the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Cold War. But and Biden also went on record saying Dick Cheney's not such a bad guy.
Yeah, Republicans are not the enemy. Dick Cheney is a pretty great guy.
Well, those are two kind of separate things, but that more caught my eye, with him going out of his way to say, "Hey, Dick Cheney's all right. He's not so bad. He's a bad rep. This Cheney guy." It's like, okay.
And then you're going to jump into the Democratic primary? And what traction did that get you?
Yeah. Because
he's such a popular guy among Democrats? No.
I don't understand any of that, especially because Dick Cheney has done nothing but try to undermine all of Obama's foreign policy every time he opens his mouth. So why would you turn around and say, Cheney's not that bad.
What? Yes, he is the devil.
And even if you do personally think he's okay, literally the guy has done nothing but undermine Obama's presidency and your vice presidency every time he opens his mouth.
Right. You don't want to undermine Obama when important decisions need to be made, but you're going to support the guy who's literally undermining Obama at every... It doesn't make any sense, Joe.
I don't know where he's going.
I don't either.
I don't know where he's going with that. And then to follow up with that, he seemed to take a shot at Hillary and say, Republicans aren't the enemy. They're good people. And, you know, that's fine. In my liberal heart of hearts, I'm all about that. Sure, let's work across the aisle.
Yeah, he was referring to the last question in the Democratic debate when she said, "Who are you most proud of having made an enemy?" And she said something about Republicans.
Yeah, it's just whatever. It's a throwaway line. But the point is, this isn't the climate for two reasons. One, first of all, I mean, I guess I'm trying to understand his angle. Maybe if he's looking for an angle to separate himself.
Yeah.
You see a lot of shit slinging from the other side. And now he sees it also with the Democrats, with them being pretty unified and pushing back against a lot of the right-wing stuff. And then maybe Joe Biden sees an angle where, well, you know, Obama won in 2008 on this unifying platform and reaching across the aisle, which never worked.
No.
It was pretty disastrous, actually. And only now shit is getting done because Obama has said, the hell with you. And he's doing a lot with executive actions and so forth.
Right.
And now Biden is trying to go back to the 2008 Obama playbook and say, well, there's too much divisiveness, and we should reach across the aisle. And I don't know.
Which again baffles me. He's been in the White House with Obama for 8 years.
And he sees what
watching him struggle and watching none of that get done at all, ever, under any circumstances, the most obstructionist Congress ever. And then he comes out with this plan of
Well,
somehow
it's not really
magically
a plan.
Yeah, but
it's just kind of a
angle.
Like,
yeah.
Look, everybody on both sides is
ripping
each other. And I'll
like,
be the great.
You're going to make the crazy Freedom Caucus House Republicans do what you're bidding? Okay.
Yeah, well, the other side, while you're burying your son, is still using you as a punchline, and you're going to go out and say, oh, well, I'm going to reach across the aisle, and these are good guys. I mean, where's the angle? How's that going to drum up support? How's that going to excite the Democratic base if you throw your hat in? I don't know what he's thinking.
I don't know either. It baffles me that he still hasn't decided, that we're still having this conversation. He missed the first debate.
Right.
Like at this point,
he's so behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
And you had both Hillary and Bernie having very strong performances.
Yes.
So to kind of negate this idea of, well, we don't have any good candidates, we need a serious one, unless Biden saw it a different way, unless he watched that and said, I'm better than both these people. I mean, that's fine. He's entitled to believe that. But he's also, I guess, realizing, well, you know, I'm not going to get to the left of Bernie. And it looks like Hillary is trying to get at least on par with Bernie to the left. So that leaves me space in the middle, which the middle that
doesn't
no longer
exist. Exactly right. And I really think that some of the support that maybe would go to Biden if Hillary wasn't in the race, so some of the older white ladies kind of crowd who are very, mm-hmm. very excited about Hillary are going to be very pissed at Biden if he tries to come in and separate her from what they think is her right to be the president.
Especially if he's really going to go, unlike Bernie, and he's really going to attack and try to undermine her on every front.
Yeah, people aren't mad at Bernie because he's not, I mean, it's all the same base, obviously. It's the Democratic primary voters, but he has a really different message.
He's never been a negative campaigner.
No, and even in the debate when he was like, I'm enough with the emails, I'm on your side kind of thing. Like, he's not attacking her. And I think people feel that he's also not...
Well, he's thinking about his bigger future too. If Hillary does go on to win the nomination, Bernie has a chance to have a cabinet position, something important, possibly a running mate. Although I doubt that.
Yeah, me too.
But he's you know I my sense is, and I don't know this for certain, that Bernie got in probably thinking, yeah, I'm probably not going to win the nomination, but I can bring all these
ideals.
There's
some shit I want to talk about.
Make socialism not, although he's really not a socialist,
no.
But. Make this idea of being a democratic socialist not a bad word, and
make Hillary talk about some of this stuff
he's been
talking about for decades.
And I think ultimately he doesn't see it as a zero sum game where he has to go all in and try to tear her down just to win, even though probably some of his advisors are pushing him that way. But he's not going to do that. Now Biden, maybe he would, but I don't get this. Like,
he kind of already. He's not even in the race yet, and he's already taken a couple shots at her with the story about his son dying, and we would rather have a Biden. Don't let the presidency go back to a Clinton. That was a shot, and then the couple of comments today were kind of a backhanded way of saying maybe she's not so great.
Right.
He's not even in yet.
And
so
if you go back, the Bidens and the Clintons have always been a little oil and water.
Yeah.
Not openly at each other's throats, but I don't think they're that
they're not
crazy.
Best friends.
They're not best
no.
friends. And they've run against each other several times.
Yes.
So, you know, this is an old, it's not a blood feud, but they're not warm and cozy. That's fine. I have no problem with that. What I do have a problem with is, you know, Joe Biden, he's ready to ride out his legacy pretty well now. You know,
totally.
He Joe Biden was, and you know, Ted Cruz is a total dick, and he was really ill-timed, you know, as soon as Beau Biden died, to come out and make his speech that Joe Biden is a punchline. But for a long time, that was true.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, yes, he's a gaffe machine. He's creepy with the ladies.
He's had his plagiarism issues.
Yeah.
The whole Anita Hill thing was kind of weird.
Horrible.
And you know, everybody's kind of first reaction when Obama named him as his running mate was kind of like, really? Biden?
Yeah. I mean, we all knew it was going to be an old white guy.
Right.
But I was
surprised.
But
then he did really well. He did his job as being a mouthpiece and pushing the agenda, and he debated Paul Ryan well, mm-hmm. and he's had a few gaffes along the way, nothing crazy.
But right now, he's kind of beloved. He's riding a high. People have really, given him a break, and I think especially because of the death of his son.
Sure.
But also, you know, he's done some stuff with the Iran deal he was pretty involved with, and some other policy stuff that people are like,
Obamacare,
Joe Biden, you know, he's not such a bad guy.
Yeah,
if
he's
he
all
gets
right.
in this race,
everything
that's
comes
gone.
To light. Everything
that's
comes
gone.
To light.
Yeah.
And this media that's been sweet-talking him and hoping he gets in because it's a story are going to turn on him like vultures, which is their job. Mm-hmm. And does he like not expect that? Does he not see that coming? Or does
I don't
he,
know.
What is he thinking? Because everything's going to come to light. The Anita Hill hearings.
Yeah.
His creepiness with ladies.
Yes. Which all kind of comes back to the you know, he was so bad during the Anita Hill. And then
all of his gaffes.
The pictures and, the things
he said.
His plagiarism
stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know necessarily that any one of these or even in a continuum necessarily make him a horrible candidate, but there are things that are going to be scrutinized and maybe make him a bad candidate.
Yeah.
Look, there's a reason Joe Biden never got any traction in when he ran in 2008 before he dropped out. And then also in either 2000 or 2004 or both those times, I don't exactly remember now, he also ran and his candidacy went nowhere.
Exactly.
He never cracked single digits. He dropped out early. He just never got anything going.
So he can either go with his legacy being the vice president, who's pretty well-loved, mm-hmm. of a two-term presidency, mm-hmm. and go write some books and be a Bill Clinton and speak at the DNC and all of that.
Do
to
charity stuff, you name it.
Three failed attempts at the presidency and all the shit that he doesn't want to talk about coming back up,
coming back
and that's
light,
how people remember
and that's
him.
How he goes out, right?
Yeah, I don't
crashing
get it.
And burning while possibly driving a wedge in the Democratic primary.
Yeah.
Really, Joe?
I don't think it's a good idea.
He,
I don't like
look,
it.
Look, it's his prerogative. If he wants to do that and he thinks he can win on that, or he really does believe that he is the best guy for the job and he wants to point out his differences about Hillary, look, he's entitled to do that. That's
of
fine.
Course.
You go do that, but he's going to lose, and he's going to lose bad.
Yeah, he's not going to win.
I don't see the angle for him anymore.
No.
Now look, I'll throw in one minor caveat, and it's possible that Joe is still waiting for this. We're going to get to this in detail, but on Thursday, Hillary is going to go before the joke of a clusterfuck that is the Benghazi committee.
She is actually doing that, we confirm. So
right.
Yes.
Yeah, there is at least a chance in theory that she's going to show up and bomb. Based on how well prepared she was in the debate and how well she seems to be covering all her bases and how the
important
wheels are
is.
Completely falling mm-hmm. off the Benghazi committee, mm-hmm. I think she's licking her chops. I think she can't wait for Thursday.
I agree.
I think she's going to kick some serious ass one way or another. But maybe Biden and his people are watching and saying, well, look, maybe something comes to light. Maybe there's a bombshell and maybe she falls on her face and maybe that finally does give us the real angle we need. That's a possibility. Right?
Even, yeah.
I mean, the timing lines up with when he says he may decide, although two articles came out today. One was a Washington Post piece that basically said, yeah, he's in, and then they pulled it.
Uh-huh.
And then a Democratic senator, somebody said, yeah, I have information, he's in.
It was
officially.
Like the head of the firefighters union or something.
It was
he went and met with them.
Too,
yeah, he said something about it too. So, yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think she's going to own face. I think she's going to make them look like the jokes that they are. Even if she doesn't, I don't think – if Hillary falls on her face and we don't think Bernie can win the general, I still don't think Joe Biden is the guy. I'm just going to go on record. I just – I don't think
– he might be by default if all that happened, I guess.
Yeah, but I just think about what his – not people who follow politics super, super close, what their impression of him is, what they know about him.
Yeah, people have short memories, and right now it's okay. But like you said, if he gets in and the press piles on and brings all this stuff to light, it's going to be a problem, just like it has been a problem for Joe Biden every time he's run for president before.
And
it's not a coincidence. It's not...
It wasn't just not his time.
Right.
He's just not a very viable candidate.
Yeah, unlike, say, when Hillary ran in 2008 and she made a lot of mistakes on the campaign trail. I don't think it was necessarily so much that Hillary's a bad candidate. She ran a bad campaign.
Yeah, she did. She made a lot of mistakes, and she's not making those same mistakes
this go around. No, she seems to have really learned from her mistakes.
Yeah.
Other possible ideas for Joe Biden presidency run is maybe that he feels as though he would be the best to carry on Obama's legacy, and maybe Hillary won't do that so much.
Yeah, but she's tied herself to Obama. She really...
Oh, sure. She has in the campaign season, but, I mean, somebody like Biden would see the bigger picture and maybe feel otherwise, and I can understand that.
Yeah. What do they think, that she's going to continue the Clinton legacy and not the Obama legacy? Is that the idea?
Maybe. And... Yeah.
I mean, I saw a thing that Bill was going to do his first campaign rally for Hillary on Saturday in Des Moines.
He's jumping in the mix, They're going for the kill.
Well, he's the key there. Loved.
They smell blood in the water, and they're going for the jugular.
Yeah.
As they should. And Biden is a part of that. I think that, you know, the timing is all coalescing. She did really well in the debate. The Benghazi commission is turning to a big fat joke. She gets to say her piece. And, you know, now Hillary's jumping on Maddow and
Maddow Friday, Bill Clinton on Saturday.
They smell blood in the water and they're going for the jugular, which is smart.
Which means she thinks she's going to do really well at these hearings, or she wouldn't have agreed to do Maddow the next day.
Oh no. Yeah. She thinks, publicizing everywhere.
Yeah.
See, hear me Friday, hear me Saturday, hear me Sunday. I think she's really, really ready and well prepared.
I do too.
And I think she's going to kick some ass. Now let's pivot to Trey Gowdy and the Benghazi committee. This guy, Trey Gowdy, is unbelievable.
I know. Tell me what you know. You said he's been kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, the other day, Trey Gowdy, in going through some of the Sidney Blumenthal emails, thought he had something real juicy. He found an email where there's correspondence between Hillary and Sidney Blumenthal about a guy in Libya who's got a great name. I think his name is Musa Kusa.
Nice. Yeah, I heard this. Okay, yeah.
And he was some kind of advisor on, you know, Libyan politics. And Trey Gowdy finds this email and he takes it upon himself to redact it as if he's a CIA agent. He redacts it, and it was not just that he took a Sharpie out. He took a Sharpie and then wrote, like the CIA would write, redacted for sensitive purposes, whatever.
Okay.
Like, as if it looked official. Problem was, it wasn't. He did that on his own, and then the CIA immediately said, and then he reported, see, look, Hillary leaked this confidential information and outed this source. This is really bad. And the CIA said, no, this wasn't a confidential informant. This is not confidential information. You don't know what you're talking about. And to make matters worse, when Trey Gowdy put that up on the Benghazi Commission website, he left the forwarded email with the name of the guy in the subject line. He hit the trifecta out of the park. He lied and fake redacted an email to make it look like it violated confidentiality.
When it didn't.
Yeah, and some people are saying there may be legal repercussions to that. Probably not.
Yeah.
But he did that, and then he said, and then when the CIA pushed back and said, no, there's nothing confidential in here, he said, well, it really should have been because it's really sensitive information. And this poor guy got outed, and he was the guy who then outed him on the website because,
he's falling apart.
It gets better. And if that wasn't bad, that was Sunday. I think it was Sunday. And then yesterday it got worse because it turns out that Trey Gowdy is taking money from a Stop Hillary super PAC, which is okay for Trey Gowdy, the politician running for his congressional seat or whatever.
Maybe not so much for the chairman of the committee. Benghazi committee.
And it looks like he's using his position on the committee as fundraising fodder, which is a no-no. That's an ethical no-no, and it may be a legal no-no. So Trey Gowdy is having the worst week in Washington, I think.
And then he gets to face Hillary on Thursday. Maybe, that'll be fun.
Maybe, And here's the thing. Like, all the pundits are saying, oh, they should just close this thing down. No, they can't. They've come too far. They've spent too much time, too much money. They've got no choice but to roll the dice and hope Hillary falls apart. Maybe they have what they think is a secret bombshell that they think Hillary won't be prepared for and she'll stumble.
Yeah.
That's looking less and less likely.
I think that you're right, that they'd probably want nothing to do with this hearing at this point, any of them, but they
can't choice now.
And
they can't turn around now.
Now they're just fucked. Now they're just...
They gotta ride with it.
Yeah.
And they'll spin it, and Fox News will spin it and say that... Hillary looks like she's lying or she's hiding something and it looked bad for her, but... the jig is up. Everybody knows what's going on.
It's obvious. It was always obvious to those of us paying attention, but at this point, look, it is like...
You've got Republicans coming out of the woodwork saying this is a Hillary Clinton witch hunt.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be associated with this clown show anymore. And you have Trey Gowdy actually on Sunday saying, telling his fellow Republicans, literally, he said, shut up. Stop talking about the Benghazi committee because you're not on it and this is our show, goddammit. And good luck with that.
You have it then. So it can be your show.
Thursday's going to be must-see TV on C-SPAN, I believe, at like 10 in the morning or something.
Great.
My guess is, now this is funny because they released a press release, I think today, when they're like, we're going to be very fair but direct with Hillary Clinton. So does that mean they're not going to give her the... PPA treatment?
The Cecil Richards treatment? They better not.
Cut her off and not let her finish the sentence?
Yeah, they better not is what I'm saying. She's not going to put up with that, first of all.
I think that's their only play, though, Rachel.
Because, right, they can't let her talk.
They can't let her talk because if they let her talk, then, she's going to humiliate them.
Yes.
So I think
it's going to be so beautiful.
So I think their only play is to talk over her and be horrible.
Use fake charts and make things up.
Assholes.
And, yeah.
And hope it flies. It won't. And it'll be a huge embarrassment.
And
it'll
when
be
women
a huge
watch,
detriment to the
I think
GOP.
When anyone watches something like that go down, it's super offensive and misogynistic, so clearly on its face. When women watch it, I can tell you, it's
even
worse.
If they don't necessarily like Hillary Clinton.
Right. You don't speak to someone that way, especially not the former Secretary of State of the United States and a presidential candidate. You don't speak to women that way at the grocery store, much less in public on the floor of Congress. Former Secretary of State.
And
like,
the misogyny under the surface kind of seeps out.
Oh, it does.
Yeah.
It does. Their total lack of respect for women in general.
Because
and
I've seen them grill men before. They've grilled Eric Holder and they've grilled
Sure.
other. But you know what? They let him finish a fucking sentence.
Yeah.
They
when
let
they ask
them
a question,
have their say.
They finish the answer.
Right, right.
Not just talk over you and, it was so bad. So I think that they have to do that. I don't think they're going to change that in any way.
It's going to be a shit show either way.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're so boxed in on this. What can they do? Unless, and what they're like to peddling, what Fox News is peddling, oh, no, we got some secret bombshells we haven't relieved yet. It's like,
you've
been leaking
ugh.
Everything to the press so far. So you're telling me you have stuff that you haven't yet leaked? And you've sort of set yourself up to look like a buffoon and then drop the good stuff?
No. If they had anything, we would have known about it as soon. I mean, especially after last week and this week when they just really seemed to be falling apart at the seams. If they had something, we'd know about it
to distract them
from. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have nothing.
No, I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. It's must-see TV. And I think Hillary's going to knock it out of the park.
Yep.
And then what, Joe Biden? Then what, Benghazi committee?
Yeah.
Then what, anybody?
Yep. That's what I'm saying. That's why I think she's doing this, like, ramp up and then do it.
Yeah, and
then
booking herself
Friday, Saturday,
everywhere through
then
the weekend.
Then it's, I'm going to take this campaign down. Uh-huh. That's right. I'm taking it down. Yeah. I am going to win this thing.
But who knows? Maybe knows? Maybe she'll have an off day. Maybe Trey Gowdy will be on his game.
Nah. It's going to be a beautiful thing to watch. I can't wait.
It should be entertaining at the very least. So, that's coming Thursday. Check it out. Biden, Webb is out. Biden may or may not get in running on the Dick Cheney wasn't such a bad guy platform.
Yes.
I don't get.
Which maybe we should pivot then to the other side because there's a couple things there.
Yeah, just a couple, right?
Next Wednesday, they're going to have a debate on CNBC.
Right up here in Boulder.
And right up here in Boulder. And CNBC has decided that you have to be polling at a certain percentage, I think it's 2%, over 2%.
There's no kids table this time, right?
No.
Okay.
To get in. So if that is true, then the following people will not be in the debate next week.
Okay.
If it stays the same. Santorum, Kasich, Jindal, Graham, and Pataki.
Okay.
Chris Christie and Rand Paul are too close to call right now. Their poll numbers are
2.86. Right.
If they don't go down any, they would make it in, but just barely. So really, I mean, that may knock out those five people. Santorum, Kasich, Jindal, Graham, and Pataki, they may be done. If they're not in the debate, I don't see them making it after that.
No. Yeah, it's a wonder why any of those guys are still running anyway. But Rand Paul the other day, he did like a live video blog of a day in the life of campaigning Rand Paul, and it was the most depressing thing.
Oh my.
No, it really, it was like imagine like an indie art house film about a guy video blogging himself, wishing people cared about him and nobody does. I really felt embarrassed for him.
Wow.
Like, I understood why you'd try to do something like this, but it completely backfired.
He didn't, like, watch it first, or he didn't have his campaign
staff? No, it was
live.
It was live.
Oh, dear. Oh, my.
It was live video of a day in the life of Rand Paul campaigning.
Mm.
And it literally looked like a guy who came from out of nowhere and said, I'm running for president. Nobody knows who I am. Watch as I do all these inconsequential things and nobody cares. And that's exactly what it was. I mean, it was sad. I'm not a Rand Paul fan by any means, but I genuinely felt for the guy because I knew what he was trying to do and it backfired miserably.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah, he's still hanging in, but he can't get any traction. Donald sucked all the air out of the room for him and other guys.
You know, what was really interesting is there was an article that was written, and I forget where it was written, but it was written by Steve Schmidt, who ran John McCain's campaign.
Yeah, Mr. Game Change himself.
Exactly. And he wrote an article freaking out about, could Donald Trump win the nomination?
Well, he's been pretty steady at the top of the polls now for how many months?
Like 3 months. They said there's longer. What is it? Long. He's been at the top longer than there is left before
the first
Super
primary,
Tuesday or
yeah.
the first primary. One of the two. Yeah.
Well, let me put it this way. When he started his rise, a lot of pundits rightfully pointed out, you know, in 2012, we had a lot of flavor of the weeks. We had Herman Cain. We had Newt Gingrich. We had Santorum. We had whoever.
Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah. But mm-hmm. Trump has now eclipsed all of those, I think, combined.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of
he's
holding
not
the lead.
Just a blip. And it's so confusing for me. But yeah, you know, they were saying he's even starting to get smarter. He's starting to attack Jeb on the Iraq War and make him talk about his brother's record.
Well,
now they're
redebating 9/11
exactly.
in conservative circles.
Right.
Was it Bush's fault or not Bush's fault, or was the Iraq War just a huge mistake? It's like there's no good answer in what Trump is introducing with this whole new line of debate.
No, and this is not what Jeb Bush wants to be talking
this
about during
the
campaign.
This is not what the RNC wants to be talking about
no.
during the campaign. Because you're really boxing yourself in. You're taking a side that either Bush fucked up and allowed 9/11 to happen, or it was just a really stupid idea to then attack Iraq afterwards. There's no daylight in terms of somehow let's blame this on Obama when the discussion is 9/11.
Right. And Jeb Bush does not want to be talking about George W. Bush. That's just the facts. He
does not want
to have that.
And
he wants to be distanced.
And he staked out his position that he has to stand up for his brother.
But,
no
you know,
matter what.
To Trump's point, I think it's fair to ask Jeb about this stuff, considering the people he chose as his advisors for the campaign. He just took the war room
from George W. Bush,
and that's his advisor. So I think it's fair to say, hey, what is that?
Yeah, but
I mean,
Trump's taking it a step further, because remember, his first line of attack was, your brother invaded Iraq, and you seem to be okay with it. That's stupid. And then he's going further back and saying, your brother also even let 9/11 happen because he sucked so bad.
They had that report that there was an imminent attack and nothing was done and all of that. And he's trying to ask really for Jeb to explain that, which, you know.
There's no good answer for the Republicans on this.
No, they are hating him for this, Trump, right now. The establishment are hating Trump
What is it? What is the big pack? Karl Rove's big pack is all in on trying to take Trump down.
Yeah.
And they're throwing lots of money in TV ads and stuff, and it's not making a dent.
Mm-mm.
Which goes to a bigger, interesting thing that pundits are just now starting, because pundits freak out. It's like, oh, there's all this money in politics. It's like, okay, well, money buys you lots of commercials and mailers, and I'm less and less convinced they move the needle much at all. I think they help early on when a candidate needs name recognition.
Sure.
But at this point, who still needs name recognition?
Right. Well, and I mean, I've wondered about this for years, about mailers, especially with the internet the way that it is and social media the way that it is. Who reads anything that's a big picture in your mailbox? Like
old people. Old people who are already
going to
vote.
And they vote, but they already kind of know who they're voting for, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they're old.
Right.
They're stuck in
they
their ways.
They know who they're voting for.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's confusing. I mean, also, of course, you need money for television advertisements and for travel and stuff like that. But even
I think
everyone mutes them.
I think people are so sick of TV
advertisements. Yeah, me too. Yes.
When I first moved here, was that, you know, the big election was coming up with Cory Gardner and poor what's his name Udall trying to hold on to his seat and Hickenlooper and all the local candidates. So it was a deluge day in, day out of all these ads, and I got so effing sick of it.
Yeah.
And I'm a political junkie. So imagine your average person who's just trying to watch Seinfeld right. or whatever, and he's getting 50 political ads an hour. They just mute them. Like,
I mean, you just like can't even
take it
anymore.
Your hair out.
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody freaks out about, you know, the Kochs and whoever trying to buy elections, but at the end of the day, I don't know that they're having that much influence throwing all their money around.
I know. I don't either. I know that in some of the local elections are starting to get invested and involved. That scares me a little bit more just because
right. And that's
can move that needle in any way they want.
Yeah, and there was a really good article in Vox about how, okay, we may come away with the presidency, but we're still getting our asses handed to us, the progressives and liberals, in local and state seats, which is true.
Yes.
And people need to get much more involved locally, which we're not.
There's even in our little community in Jefferson County, there's a school board recall election.
Right.
And the three members that they're trying to recall are funded by the Koch brothers have funded their campaign, which is insane. In Jefferson County, Colorado school board election, they have their hands.
Well, part of that curriculum that Jeffco, besides saying like slavery wasn't so bad and white people are great or whatever,
and they want to defund schools and make them all charter schools.
Remember, a big part of that curriculum that they were fighting for, that the students walked out about, was global warming denial.
Right.
So the Kochs have an understandable.
Yes.
Plus, you're in a region where there's a lot of mining interest. There's a lot of gas interest.
Fracking. Yep.
Fracking. So that makes sense why they would do that.
Yeah.
But we need to combat that. Well, look, in terms of the school board recall, that was a very effective local grassroots thing that happened, because it looked like they were just going to shove this down everybody's throats. And the students themselves got involved.
They did.
Young progressives got involved. Yeah. Some outside progressive groups got involved.
Yes.
And we actually did a good job there. Now, this needs to happen everywhere.
All the time for all the elections and issues, not just, you know, pot or something that's sexy, but stuff like school board elections and stuff like your local city councilor and mayor and state legislatures.
Because these are the people that decide when the voting precincts are going to be open and stuff with the cops and
absolutely,
you know, all of
all
this
politics
stuff
is local,
all
right?
All politics is local.
And we are getting our asses handed to us on local politics.
Oh, yeah.
And it's killing us. And that's why we don't have the House.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been so gerrymandered that,
yeah,
you know, and now the court is stepping a little bit to try to roll some of that back, but we still have light years to go.
Yeah.
Like the House, it's nearly impossible that we're going to retake the House, maybe the Senate, but probably not either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, great. We'll have President Clinton, and she's still going to have a very recalcitrant Congress to try to work with. Maybe she's learned a few, you know, executive order tricks from Obama. So, you know, it's certainly better than the alternative, but
we
have a lot of work to do, but that's another topic for another podcast. What else we got in the news, Rach?
Okay. Let's see. Ohio suspended executions until 2017 because they had no way to get the drugs.
Not legally, at least.
Not legally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they're buying them from some guy in India that has a fake storefront?
Yeah. We used to get them from pharmaceutical companies in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out that we were not using these drugs for care, but rather using them for murder.
Right.
And
the FDA hasn't approved these for that?
No. I don't know how they could.
So states are basically using certain drugs, quote, off-label to kill people.
Correct. And it's not working very well is the problem.
Yeah.
Since it's not intended for that use, and they're also not administered by doctors, obviously, because first do no harm, a lot of these executions are being botched, and it's taking a really long time, and people are
They're torturing
suffering.
People,
torturing people to death, essentially, with the wrong drug cocktail. And so I think, you know, it's a really big problem for these states who still want to be murdering people, but they're really not having a very good solution. The one solution that they do have is, some guy in India who's sending them. But how do we know? I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a cluster. And Nebraska went as far in the state house, at least, to repeal. And the governor's fighting back, and it's kind of, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't. Unfortunately, it should be an important issue. I still don't think it's on too many people's radars.
No.
I don't think it's going to come up in any of the debates coming forward.
No. For any of our listeners, though, there's a book I'd recommend called Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. He's a human rights attorney, specifically working with people to get them out of prison, death penalty stuff. But it's a tremendous read, and I think you can't read it and finish it and think this is a good idea, that we should keep doing this. So if anybody hasn't read that, I would check it out. But yeah, I think a lot of, you know, this issue has been so up and down, pendulum swinging in our country for so many years. And so maybe the pendulum's starting to swing back toward, it's not a good idea. I don't know, but I know the court is going to hear it this session, so they're going to hear another death penalty case. So we'll be on the lookout for that.
Knowing these Republican state houses, though, they'll just like go back to the electric chair, or the firing squad, or all these other horrific things. Like there's no good way to murder somebody.
Nope.
You know,
state sanctioned murder is murder. Yes,
and you're gonna remind people of horrible, brutal dictatorships, non-democracies when you choose to do that and keep the death penalty, even though we know it's not a deterrent for anything.
Correct. And it's also racially biased.
Yes. Yes.
And
it is a pound of flesh law is what I like to call it. It's about vengeance, or this American idea of an eye for an eye.
Yeah.
I'd hope would be a little more enlightened than that, but no.
Sure.
And again, it's separate from the whole debate. Like, we're not arguing that, like, serial killers and murderers and horrible people shouldn't be locked up.
Right.
You know, that's a different thing. We're talking about locking up pot users for decades.
Exactly.
But, you know, the death penalty, if you're going to accept the death penalty, then you have to accept that it's going to be gross and brutal. And
we're going to kill innocent people if we haven't already.
We're going to kill some innocent people, and we're going to torture others, innocent or not. And if you're okay with that, I guess you're okay with that, although it's not an actual deterrent.
No, it's not a deterrent. There's that beautiful story, right, from back in the day when in England they used to hang people for pickpocketing.
Mm-hmm.
And someone decided to do a study on how many people got pickpocketed at the public hanging of pickpocketers.
Yeah.
Lots. So if it's a deterrent, explain that to me.
Right.
I'm watching someone be hung for something that I'm doing while I'm watching it.
Yeah, short answer, it's not.
No.
Moving on from that, I just want to get back to the Republican side right now. We got Trump holding his lead and the good Dr. Ben Carson in a close second, who said a bunch more ridiculous things on the Sunday talk show circuit. I'm trying to remember specifically what they were, but I think he didn't know the difference between Syria and Libya and NATO or something. It's hard for me to even keep track. He says so many stupid things every single day, yet when they run these hypothetical head-to-heads, he still does pretty well. Like, he's tied, quote, tied with Hillary in the latest CNN poll. And yeah, I have the same reaction.
Come on.
I have the same reaction. Nobody knows who this guy is yet.
Right.
Or not enough of the core people who don't pay attention. It's right now Hillary, who you either like or don't like, and then generic Republican candidate. Oh, and he's a black guy, and he's not Donald Trump. Okay, sure. Maybe I'd vote for him.
Mm-hmm. He's a neurosurgeon? Sounds
right.
good.
Yeah, wait till they get a load of this guy.
And
that'll only really happen in earnest if he wins the nomination. The interesting thing on the Republican side is that it seems to be gaffe-proof. Nothing seems to derail these guys.
I mean, when we were talking about Biden earlier, we didn't really mention too much of his gaffe problem because it doesn't seem to matter anymore suddenly.
Well, not on the Republican side. It might still matter on the Democratic side. I don't know.
But is Biden looking at that going, did you hear any? Like, I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe.
I'm fine.
I mean, that could be what Biden's thinking. He sees the clown show, what's going on with Trump and Carson, and he says, I can get away with saying anything.
I feel like also Rubio is, I'm not hearing a lot from him. He's number three. He's got about half as much as either Trump or Carson in the percentage wise, but he's kind of laying low. And I think that's because maybe waiting till the next debate to kind of, is he doing a lot of prep? I don't know, but I think it might be smart just in that he's going to give Trump and Carson the opportunity to just keep saying ridiculous things, and then when he's up on the stage, he looks reasonable, kind of like the Jeb Bush idea.
I've got several problems with that. My first one is that doesn't seem to be moving the needle. Being the adult in the room is not helping with
apparently
Republican
that doesn't
voters.
Help. Yeah,
yeah, that just bores them. B, if you keep languishing in third or fourth in the polls, it gets harder and harder to fundraise.
That's true.
And with Walker out now and Bush kind of flailing, it looks like maybe the establishment Coke money might go to Rubio, but they haven't made that commitment yet.
Yeah.
And third, I don't think Rubio is a very good candidate.
Oh, I don't either. I think he's too young, and I think he's too
No, no, no. He tried to put his name on the map by by saying, okay, well, the country's obviously ready for immigration reform. Even Hannity said it.
Yep.
And so, okay, well, I'll be the architect of that, and I got a Hispanic last name, and I'll be this great divider and uniter. And guess what? Your base wants nothing to do with that.
Right.
Your base wants to hear that Mexicans are dirty rapists and Muslims need to go away on their camel and we have to stop Sharia law in Tennessee, which is a thing.
Something.
Now, that's what they want. So Rubio's not that. Bush isn't that. The two...
I think it works good in general, but that's the great... That's the beauty of the Republican primary process is...
It's such a
reasonable people who might actually stand a chance of beating some of our guys never get the nomination.
And they feel burnt by McCain and Romney.
Right.
Who, even though they had some of these awful platforms, they had self-deportation and some of this other awful stuff.
Yeah.
They still sounded reasonable.
Yeah.
Like they wouldn't say Mexicans are the dirty rapists and we need to build a wall and a Muslim should never be president. The guys saying that ridiculous shit are the two guys leading. In the GOP field. It's amazing and it's not because that's always the flirtation that they've had to keep their base activated. And when it came down to brass tacks, they weren't willing to go that far. Well, now you got two clowns that are.
Yeah.
And guess what? They're leading the pack.
It's working.
It's not a coincidence.
Again, I don't know that by Super Tuesday, the people who vote in Republican primaries who are not paying attention right now, when they start to pay attention once the new year happens, maybe they
coalesce around
say
maybe
somebody other than these two jokers, but maybe. I don't know. I didn't think Trump was going to last this long. I have no earthly idea what's going to happen at this point.
But see, here's the thing, especially with Carson, because you know Trump is kind of Trump, and that's his whole shtick is he says crazy shit. Carson has said some awful, crazy, bizarre, uninformed shit every single day going back the last couple of years, and he just keeps saying and saying it, and he's still rising in the polls.
I also feel like he's not getting called out enough by the media for the crazy shit he's saying.
No, he's not, because he's still fascinating.
I don't know how they can listen to him talk. I swear to God, every time it's like nails on a chalkboard. It's gross.
They're starting to call him out a little, and then when he gets called out, he says even more bizarre self-contradictory shit.
Yeah, he was attacking the media for misconstruing the things he said, which are
Every time he gets called out for saying something ridiculous, he turns around and blames the media.
Yeah. He said something about being at war with the media now because they're not representing...
And the red meat, the base loves that kind of red meat.
Yeah.
Because the media's all out to get him, and they have a liberal bias, and blah, blah, blah.
I mean, we're talking about Fox News, though.
No, I do laugh when I see like CNN, and then the right wing pundits get excited and like Ben Carson leads Hillary Clinton 49-48. I say, yeah, you wait, you just wait.
No, that's
till these two
yeah.
get in a room together and run in a general election, and Ben Carson has microphones in his face every day and is trying to explain.
Oh my
his
God,
fantasy
she would eat
land.
Him alive.
Any competent candidate would.
Yeah,
and so it's like, oh man, I hope it's a Trump or Carson that ends up with the nomination. I'm still not convinced that's going to happen, but things seem to be, I don't know if I want to say cementing, but when you think about 2012 and how much everything was jumping around, everybody was a flavor of the week.
Yeah.
It was Perry and Santorum and Gingrich and whoever.
It's not like, the same this
now
year.
Now it's kind of the trend lines are stabilizing.
Yeah, they really are. And, you know, there's been some switcheroos in the people lower ones.
Yeah,
but
mini bumps. Carly had a mini baby bump.
Yeah.
Not literally a baby bump.
No.
I mean, hey, I don't know.
Man. I don't know.
50s the new 40 or whatever. But
I haven't heard anything from her.
She actually won a couple brownie points with me the other day, sort of. She was at some, you know, town hall of Klansmen or whatever. And one of them was like, these Muslims, they want all these rights, but they shouldn't get them. If they don't like it, they should hop on their camel and ride out of town.
Jesus.
It's like, no, literally, some Yahoo said that. And Carly, as diplomatically as she could, said, you know, we need to judge people on their individual character, not narrow cast them because of their ethnicity or whatever. And I was like, hey, that's an adult thing to say.
Wow.
Good.
Nice.
Kudos to you, Carly.
Okay.
You know,
fine.
Blind squirrel finds a nut.
So that just killed her campaign then.
Probably, yeah. It's not going to help. It helped with me and with reasonable people out there, but you're not running in a reasonable electorate right now.
No. Absolutely.
So that probably won't help her. No. But yeah, the Carly bump has faded. Some of that, I would like to think it had to do with all her Planned Parenthood hysteria being debunked as being a weird fantasy.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it has something to do with that or not. Maybe she just hasn't gotten enough press, or she hasn't said...
She wasn't ever going to get the thing anyway. She's a woman in a party that is not going to vote for a lady to be the president. I'm just saying. Yeah, it's never going to happen.
Is that so?
Ever.
I mean,
because yes.
Ben Carson is up in a close second. He's a black dude.
Yeah. No, it's different. There's no way.
Really?
No. Huh. They'll never elect a woman. No. As their party's nominee, no way. No way. Not anytime
soon. I was a little
soon.
Surprised in 2012 they went with a Mormon.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised.
Me too.
But that's a far cry from a woman.
Yeah.
Because he's still a rich white guy.
Exactly.
Mormon
really
or not.
Really rich white guy, right?
Mormon or not, he's a really rich guy who says corporations are people too, and 47% of the population is takers. So
binders of women.
Binders full of women.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know if it's so much of a woman thing is that Carly got on the map and got her bump when she got hysterical about Planned Parenthood, even though it was fantasy, and she hasn't said anything ridiculous since. So
right.
She needs to say something ridiculous again if she wants to get back in it. And my question is, how long are this, quote, serious candidates, I guess at this point, just Bush and Rubio?
Yeah.
Because really, you technically still have, what, 10 or 12, but, you know,
nah.
Christie, Rand Paul, Pataki, these people aren't serious candidates anymore.
No.
Come
Santorum,
on.
Santorum, come on.
Yeah. They're still technically running, like Lincoln Chafee is technically still running.
Right.
Okay. But at how long until a Rubio or Bush gets desperate and just starts saying crazy shit? I don't think they will.
I think they won't either. Yeah, I think they're both
think
holding
Jeb...
out for the, okay, establishment, come rescue us and get rid of these crazy people or we're never going
to
win.
Right, because at least in Rubio's case, if he doesn't win this time around, he's got many years to make
a
big...
Yeah, he's a baby.
Yeah, he doesn't want to flame out in this one shot at the top.
Right.
And Bush, I don't think it's in him to get... I mean, he would have to almost join sides with Donald Trump. And, you know, Jeb is staking his whole presidency on, I'm the adult, reasonable person in the room. And this crazy man is saying this wild shit. So he can't turn around
right.
and be like, I could be crazy too, guys.
No, he won't.
Because it would come across as inauthentic even if he tried.
Correct. I totally agree.
But by the same token, establishment or not, Bush is an awful, terrible candidate. And this is what I try to explain to people, is that... maybe he is the only establishment alternative. He's still a terrible effing candidate.
Yeah.
And a great example of that was the other day, it was one or two days ago, when he was railing on and on about Trump is a dick for saying 9/11 was his brother's fault. And then they said, well, what about Hillary Clinton and the Benghazi investigation? And he was completely unprepared. He was stuttering
wow.
and sputtering, and he wasn't making sense. And you could just tell, like, it never occurred to him that he might get that question.
Amazing.
Like, how do you not draw that simple parallel of A to B when you are the presumptive, eventually front runner, and it looks like the person leading the other pack is going to go head to head, and you're trying to defend your brother from a terrorist attack, and there's a whole commission trying to lay the blame on the Democratic front runner, and you have no answer? You have no idea? You never thought of that?
It's amazing.
I mean, that is a shitty, unprepared candidate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's literally just all of his little brain can focus on his one thing at a time.
Right.
So it's Trump right now. Oh, that Clinton woman? I don't know. What do you mean? I don't... What?
Yeah. That's
insane.
That's bad.
That's insane.
That's bad. And that's part of it, too, is that... The media gets very hyped up on tropes. So the trope is, this is the anti-establishment year, and people like Trump and Carson and Fiorina are getting everybody excited. It's like, okay, sure, but maybe if you had some establishment candidates who were worth a crap?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
That's the thing that
they weren't an actual fucking joke. Yeah.
Bush and Rubio are not good candidates.
No, they're terrible candidates, but they're just the only reasonable people of this pool of ridiculousness.
Yes.
And so we start talking about them as though they actually stand any chance of winning, which they don't. No matter who they pick, I'm not.
Well, that's why it's so dire worried. For the presidency of Republicans. And I could be wrong. The things could totally change. Who knows? But, you know, you think about when Romney finally broke through, right? Or McCain.
Mm-hmm.
The conservative base wasn't excited about this.
No,
guys.
Neither one of them.
They were like, okay. And then they feigned excitement. And then towards the very end, when the polls started looking kind of good, like, well, shit, we might actually beat Obama. Then they sort of kind of jumped on the bandwagon a little bit, but it wasn't.
And both of their VP picks were specifically to rouse up the base. Palin and Paul Ryan were both specifically picked because the establishment candidate nobody liked.
Yeah. Right. And you know, that doesn't help you win. And we've seen it on both sides. You know, progressives weren't excited about John Kerry.
No.
We could have been excited about Al Gore if Al Gore would have actually been Al Gore.
Yes.
But he wasn't. He was Mr.
Pod People.
Milquetoast Center.
Version of, yeah.
I'm separating myself from those popular Democratic presidents and FDR because blowjobs and whatever.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay. And they still almost won. You know,
we should have, but yeah. Yeah.
You know, and then Kerry finally kind of got on the stick at the very, very end.
Yeah.
But he had been totally defined
by
then as a flip-flopper.
Bad campaign.
It was awful. Yeah.
Ugh, it's painful to think about.
It was cringe-inducing. I literally, it's like the poll said that, okay, our guy has a chance, but then I'd watch Kerry talk and do interviews, and I can't. I got to turn it off. This guy sucks.
It's
he's a terrible candidate.
And then the weird photo ops.
And he's not a bad guy. He's a very smart guy. He's an accomplished politician. He's an accomplished diplomat.
Sure.
He was just a shitty presidential campaigner.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was painful to watch. Yeah.
But the point is, when you have a candidate who the base is not very excited about and it is not charismatic and is not moving people, then good luck.
Yeah. It doesn't seem to work for either side, as we just pointed out.
No.
Speaking of vice presidential candidates, Paul Ryan. ongoing nightmarish mess in the U.S. House of Representatives had a weird wrinkle tonight. So Paul Ryan came out and said, very confusing, what exactly? I am going to maybe do it if you can. He had like a list of demands.
Yeah,
and then,
that he made very public, which was interesting.
Yeah, he basically just smacked upside the head the Freedom Caucus.
And said,
if you don't agree to compromise and not shut the government down and not be crazy people, then I'll consider it. And he's literally like, I don't want to do this. Like, on national television at a press conference, I really don't want this job.
Yeah, yeah. And
but
there
were
some different
party,
takes. McKay Coppins from BuzzFeed kind of said, okay, he's going to do it.
Yeah.
Some other people were like, I'm not so sure if he's going to do it. And then yet some other people were like, I don't know if this is going to pass the Freedom Caucus smell test.
Right. So they were saying 4/5 of the Freedom Caucus have to say yes.
Yeah.
But who they want is Daniel Webster, we found out.
Who's a piece of work.
Holy God. For those of you who don't know.
From my lovely home state of Florida.
Florida. So, of course, he's just a peach.
Mm-hmm.
He served in the Florida state legislature for like 28 years or something crazy.
Yeah,
longest
a lifer.
Serving.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then... now he serves in the U.S. House, and he's done some interesting things in his career. It's not surprising to me that the Freedom Caucus loves him.
Mm-hmm.
For example, he was deeply involved in, remember the Terri Schiavo case?
Oh,
with the brain-dead woman whose family wanted to take her off life support.
No, the husband wanted to take her off life support. Her family wanted to keep her on life support.
Right.
And legally, the husband had the right.
Of course.
But then a bunch of grandstanding right-wing politicians, including at the time Governor Jeb Bush, tried to step in and say, no, she's alive and spry and well is gonna write a symphony or run a marathon one day or something.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they got all kinds of the government involved, and they had these mock court trial things.
Yeah, and hearings. Just... And even Republicans turned on him and said, this is a bridge too far.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, Webster also supports forced ultrasounds for women who want to have an abortion,
of course.
He legalized homeschooling in the state of Florida, homeschooled his 6 children, and the same teachings, I guess you'd call them, curriculum, I would hesitate to call it curriculum, as the Quiverfill movement, or the Duggars, as we all are.
Yeah,
aware.
And we know how well that turned out, so.
Yeah, so he's a real, real, real fringy right-wing conservative Christian nut job.
Yes.
So of course they want him.
Of course they want
him. Of course they do.
And the problem there is if they sort of forced him down everybody's throats, at least as a candidate, he wouldn't get the support of the establishment.
No.
Who at least in terms of House votes still matters.
Right. I mean, Paul Ryan literally said, if I'm not a unifying character, if I'm not a unifying force, that's fine. I will stay the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee where I've always wanted to be.
Which is exactly what he wants. And maybe a presidential run one day. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like, if you will agree to this list of demands, he's like, I'm leaving it up to you. I'm leaving it up to you guys. If you can unify and agree to this, fine. But if not, no skin off my ass. I don't want the job anyway.
Let me give you a little background on Paul Ryan. I before we did this, started the show, I dug up a blog I did about 3 years ago when he was running as the VP, and I called it "Paul Ryan is a whore and thinks you're stupid." And in rereading,
it's wonderful.
In rereading it, I take nothing back from that because this guy really had just had no spine, couldn't stand by his own convictions, and just flailed all over the place, which I guess is part of presidential politics, sure. But this guy is a Ayn Rand disciple. Mm-hmm. He's a perfect what David Waldman calls a gimmitarian. Like, he was more than happy to take Social Security when he needed it. When I think one of his parents died and he had to like work through college and
yeah,
whatever. And now he wants to gut it and get rid of it and its dependency, you know, typical gimmitarianism.
Yeah.
And you know, he's not moderate in any sense of the word. He's very, very right wing. He has a fantasy land budget that wouldn't work in any way, shape or form. You know, it's crazy Kansas libertarianism on steroids, mm-hmm. which you know how well that's working out in Kansas. Just ask Sam Brownback.
Exactly right.
Or our friend Brenna, who's still stuck living there for the moment.
Yes.
So this guy, you know, this guy's some character, but as far as the quote Freedom Caucus is concerned, he's just not far enough for them because he wants to actually still try to govern and make the government function.
I mean, it was crazy that I'm sitting there watching him talk me. And I'm like, gosh, he sure sounds reasonable. Paul Ryan, no, that is how far we've come. Paul Ryan is the voice of reason in the Republican Party. Oh, I don't even know what to say about that. Yeah. It's terrifying.
By comparison, he is. And for that reason, I don't think, A, I have a hard time believing that the Freedom Caucus is going to cave to these demands of his.
I don't. Yeah, what? Why
or,
would they?
Or
why?
Or
they don't have to.
Right. Or B, maybe they're going to get in a room, they're going to bullshit each other to move forward. But if Paul Ryan's smart, and I think he could sniff that out,
mm-hmm.
and why would he agree to do this just to get set up, to get challenged and ruined?
In a job he doesn't want.
In a job he doesn't really want.
I know.
So I wonder one of two things. A, is this Paul Ryan's token, get everybody off my back, list of demands knows will never be met, so he doesn't actually have to take the job, but he can say, hey, look, I offered myself up if we did this right, but you guys didn't want to. So I,
right.
That could be what he's doing. Or B, he's going to write down a list of demands, and they're going to go along with it. And if they try not to, he will work across the aisle with Democrats, like Boehner has had to do to pass stuff, and say, look, I told you what I needed to have happen, and you stabbed me in the back.
Well, and I think the reason he did this so publicly, not in closed doors behind chambers.
Well, he's meeting with them behind closed doors as well.
Yeah, but he did this publicly so that if they start doing this obstructionist bullshit, he doesn't get blamed. He has it on record, like, this is what I need from you. And if you don't do it, then we're fucked.
Yeah.
And then they're not going to do it. And he's going to go, it's these 40 wackadoos that are the problem, not the party. And that's, I think, his vision for saving the party. Throw them under the fucking bus.
And in a very bleak way, I guess that's the most positive thing we've seen out of one of these people.
I know. Even
that makes me go to the logical conclusion that it's not going to happen.
Right.
They're not going to cave to his demands because they can't. Or they're gonna say okay, and they're just going to wait to pounce. And say, don't you dare pull a Boehner and work across the aisle. And we're going to shut the government down over the debt ceiling. We're going to shut the government down.
And then, then he says, look, I have it on record. You agreed to compromise. You agreed to all of these things. You're not doing that. I'm working with someone else. And they have to answer not only to the American people, but to their own party and to their own. I mean, I think it's a smart move if he's going to do it.
Yeah.
I also think it's really funny that Harry Reid endorsed Paul Ryan.
I was about to get to that. Mm-hmm. Our Uber troll in the Democrat in the Senate. Mr. Harry Reid can always smell when it's time to throw a monkey wrench into the operation.
Yep.
And watch the chaos.
So cute.
So Harry Reid sees this kind of coalesce, and he's like, oh, Ryan, they're trying to work out a bargain, huh? Harry Reid grabs his microphone and says, I support Paul Ryan. I think he's great. He'd be a great speaker.
Yeah, he should definitely be the speaker. He's worked with us before, and he helped pass the budget, and da-da-da. Yeah, it was hilarious. And then they're like...
And he knows exactly what it's going to do, because he knows that the Freedom Caucus is, at this point, is a bunch of trained monkeys. Yep. And they're going to react like a bunch of hyperventilating chimpanzees when he says that.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, see, no, Paul Ryan's going to be a turncoat and he's not.
See, the Democrats want him. This is why we can't have him.
Yeah. And guess what? Guess what? I think it was Hannity and some Fox people and Breitbart people have already started blasting tweets out tonight. Yeah, no Paul Ryan.
Well, yeah, Hannity came out and literally said, look, you already got rid of Boehner. He was too moderate. You got rid of McCarthy, too moderate. Don't settle for Paul Ryan. Get the guy that you want. Not, maybe he can't do math, I'm not exactly sure, but 40 people is not enough to elect a speaker of the House.
They can't do math. That's why they think that having these hostage negotiations to push their way through over a presidential veto and votes they don't have in the Congress is somehow going to work to repeal Obamacare.
And is a good use of their time for some reason. Yeah. No, it was really funny. And then the reporter asked Harry Reid, they're like, do you think that that was going to make anybody not want to have Paul Ryan now that you said it? And he was like, I'm just speaking the truth. Like, he's straight up trolling them.
He's a master of that. You know, Harry Reid, he's done a lot of good things policy-wise. He's done some things I'm not so crazy about. I'm not saying he's perfect, but he's a master troll of stoking chaos on the other side.
It's so easy. I would do the same thing, man. It's
so easy, but your timing. It's all about timing.
Yes.
Your timing has to be good, and your delivery
like 3 hours before Paul Ryan's announcement.
And Harry Reid is a master. He's been doing this for years, and it drives the right friggin' crazy, yet they can't help but react.
Yeah.
Like, if they were smarter and more disciplined, they'd shrug it off.
Ignore
him. And be like, yeah, why, we're not listening to Harry Reid about this.
Yeah.
But instead,
it's not even in the House. Who cares?
Yeah. But instead, they lose their minds. They go, oh, my God, Harry Reid. And then you know,
Paul Ryan's secret liberal because Harry Reid loves him. Like, oh, yeah, that's yes. Okay.
It's like he's got you trained like chihuahuas. It's amazing.
It's like Pavlov's dogs over there.
Yeah. And he knows exactly what he's doing and it works.
It's cute.
And Obama's pretty good at that, too, but not even as much as Harry Reid.
Well, he's got so much experience over there. Yeah.
So there's that. Harry Reid's trying to scuttle it because the more GOP House chaos, the better. And lame duck Boehner forced to make deals to save the party probably works out better.
Yeah. He was even on record tonight saying, I guess it was earlier today, saying, oh, yeah, I think Paul Ryan should do it. And I think he.
This is great. It was, I think it was Brett Baier at Fox, was like, well, why should Paul Ryan take this job? And he's like, somebody's got
to
do it.
Yeah, that's the reason he has to do it. Somebody has to do it. Like, I'm not going to fucking do it anymore. Somebody's got to do it. And you're like, that is not a good reason to take this job.
He couldn't even, like, put on a diplomatic bullshit show. It's a prestigious job. And it's this. He's like,
no,
somebody has to do it.
Somebody's going to have to do this. And it's not going to be me. So
Boehner. I'm not going to go as far as say I like the guy, but at least I'm starting to feel a little empathy for him.
Yeah, same.
About what he's tried to do with these fucking crazy people.
Oh, my God. It's insane. But yeah. And then non-domestic politics news, just really quick. Canada had an election.
Oh, Canada.
And we finally got rid of that asshole Stephen Harper, which I'm very sure that most of Canada is very happy about. And we in the States should be as well, because one fewer crazy conservative racist piece of shit that's running governments, the better for everyone. So
yeah, the Canadian system runs sort of like the British system, and I'm not going to bore everybody with the details, but it's
parliamentary.
It's representative democracy, but it's parliamentary. Once you have things like MPs, and they get voted in to represent a district, and it's different ish from our system.
Yeah, it would basically be like if Congress elected the president based on how many Democrats or Republicans were in Congress.
A lot of democracies do it that way. Yeah. Israel has something similar. And
so they don't directly vote in their prime minister.
Right.
But
you have to have a coalition or
Or a majority, but usually it's a coalition because we are like one of the only two-party systems. Anyway, you can look it up if you don't know. This guy Harper was in had 3 terms, so he served for 10 years.
Long, dark 10 years.
Yeah. And there were 3 parties this time in Canada. One was the New Democratic Party, one was the Liberal Party, and one was the Conservative Party, I guess.
Yeah, just a quick aside, in looking at the election results last night, there's also a party called the Rhinoceros Party.
Okay.
They're kind of a joke party.
Okay, like the Pirate Party in Sweden.
No, there's a Pirate Party in Canada, too.
Nice.
But apparently Pirate Party is more semi-serious.
Okay.
There's also, like, there's one that calls himself the Marxist-Leninist Party.
Nice.
Yeah, and there's some silly ones, too. But that's what's fun about
multiple party system. Yeah, and then they'll all go coalition with the Liberal Party instead of the Conservative Party, and that's how we get. Yeah, but anyway.
And in the last few months, Harper knew he was in trouble, so he tried to gin up a lot of Islamophobia.
Yeah.
And Canadians just naturally don't really go for that.
No. No, they weren't having it.
Yeah, Harper also joined in with a Quebec separatist group.
Oh, wow, I didn't know this.
Yeah, yeah, and that didn't play really well either. Yeah.
Not actually, not so much Abe Lincoln over there.
No.
So the new guy, the Liberal Party won.
Mm-hmm.
And from what we have found out, the Liberal Party is actually kind of a more left centrist. You were saying the new Democratic Party is kind Democratic of the Bernie Sanders more the
further,
liberal.
The further left. And the way, you know, I'm just reading the sound bites. I don't follow Canadian politics daily.
Sure.
Like I do American politics. But it seemed to be the kind of thing where Harper's in trouble. They wanted the Conservatives out. So it was more or less split between the Liberals and the New Democratic Party, and the Liberal Party said, "Well, join us, and then we'll kick out Harper." And most people did.
Yeah. So the new guy's name is Justin Trudeau, mm-hmm. and he is famous for a lot of reasons, but primarily he's famous because his father was this guy named Pierre Trudeau, who was the Prime Minister of Canada for a really long time.
Yeah. Very popular.
And Justin Trudeau is young, attractive. He's been in the public spotlight his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's obviously some like embarrassing fashion choices and things like that. But overall,
young, energetic guy. Yeah. Kind of Obama-like, they're saying. Sort of.
Not widely regarded as a super smart guy, not like his dad.
Yeah.
But seems like a real compassionate guy. Seems like not Harper. So that's pretty exciting out of Canada.
Sure. And will it bleed over into American politics? No.
No.
But it's fun anyway.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But no, there are some immediate things. I think Canada's recalling some of their military support in Syria and Iraq or whatever. So
yeah,
they're pushing forward already with some stuff that maybe necessarily Obama won't like. But
right, but I mean, I think it's good because even just recently, the UK they had a pretty major upset also, right? The Labour Party won, which is kind of their version of Bernie. So I think maybe world politics is starting to shift a little bit.
A little bit.
It's
a mixed bag. You have right wing more taking a little more hold because of the Syrian refugee crisis in places like Germany and some other European countries.
Yeah, they've got some real Islamophobia problems going on over there. Some nationalistic tendencies that we don't like to see.
Which we've seen in very ugly displays and news and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed bag, but certainly in Canada and Great Britain, there's been some positive movement on that front. We'll see what happens here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, our system doesn't allow for such overnight radical change, just via the will of the voters.
Yep.
You know, for instance, the Democratic congressional candidates got a million more votes, yet we lost a bunch of ground because of gerrymandering.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Like we said, we're going to do a whole show at some point about acting locally and getting organized, which we are going to try to get very much involved in moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty good condensation of the news of the last few days. We're definitely going to want to talk after the Hillary hearings.
Yes.
And the Benghazi joke clown car.
Definitely. Definitely. We'll do that for sure.
And Biden at some point will make a decision.
They're saying in the next 48 hours, so
maybe,
I would say... maybe by the next time we do a podcast.
I don't know. It's just, it doesn't make sense that he's dragging it out this long. Maybe they'll just drag it out forever.
I think people are going to start not taking him seriously as a candidate if he doesn't do something, or it'll also make him look wishy-washy. If you can't decide by now, like maybe you don't want it bad enough.
Yeah.
Ross Perot style.
I think that's an important point. You know, why weren't you there in the first debate?
Right.
But
how bad do you really want this?
How bad do you want this?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yep. We shall see.
Exciting, interesting stuff coming up. Eventually, Arliss Bunny will be joining us to talk economics. I know she's a very busy lady, but we're going to have her on sometime soon, hopefully. And spread the word. We're going to have some more guests on. And anything else coming down the pipe? I know we're going to be doing a Supreme Court episode.
We are.
Soon.
We're still working on that. We're just trying to get all of our research ducks in a row so we don't make asses of ourselves. So that'll be in the next, coming down the pipeline.
So tune in Thursday, C-SPAN, and I guess keep your Twitter active to see if Joe Biden jumps in the race on the Go Dick Cheney party or whatever the hell he's doing. And we'll be back soon. I am Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Have a great night.